south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander...
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started.
All right, here's something you won't see up in the States. Now, lately, I've been in Colombia, mostly Bogota and Medellin, and, you know, you hit the restaurants. You can imagine my surprise when I open up a menu in a decent restaurant to see... On the right side, where they show the prices, there's two columns. One column says cash and one says credit card. Now, for any of you out there who've been to Latin America, you know, a lot of times you walk into a store or restaurant and there'll be a sign up there by the cash register or maybe a little notation in a menu at a restaurant that says 6% or 3% or 5% will be added if you use a credit card. All right, so I'm used to seeing that, but I never, ever in my life saw such a preponderance of restaurants that went out of their way to actually have the menus printed up with two columns in them. Talk about overkill. Now, I didn't take the time to do the calculations to see, you know, if the credit card price was 4, 5, or 6% more every time. I should have, though, because let's say if every single item in the credit card column was 5% more than the cash price, talk about idiotic redundancy. Why don't they just stick with a little footnote at the bottom of the menu? I don't get it. So anyway, just another small thing to let you know things are different here in Latin America. And sometimes, a lot of times, you can't really explain why. There's not a lot of logic to it. Hey, that's why they call it the third world. Speaking of the term third world, did you know it's not politically correct to use that term anymore? You know what I say? F*** 'em. I was at a little party, a get-together, a couple weeks ago. I was the only gringo, as usual. Most everyone there had money or pretended to have money, and mostly a college-educated crowd. And during the conversation, I said the phrase third world once or twice, and a guy corrected me. He seemed a little bit insulted, like I just told him his wife was ugly or something, and she was. He said, you know, third world, or in Spanish, tercer mundista, is a pejorative term. And I said, like what? And he couldn't think of an example. Now, I didn't know this guy. And in the moment, I felt a little argumentative, and I said, come on, tell me, like what? Like, for example, gringo? Then I said, you know, depending on the way you use the word gringo and the inflection determines whether or not it's an insult to first world people or not. And I emphasized the first world part, and he cringed a bit. Apparently, these days, to say first world is not PC either. Well, by then, I knew I'd set a bad tone for our conversation, so I said, forget about the word gringo. It doesn't bother me when people call me gringo. But, I said, what about the word mojado, which directly translates to the word wetback in Spanish, a word that would be considered an insult or derogatory term up in the States. He didn't see what I was getting at. He didn't see the point, nor did anyone else in the room. But it's a term Latinos use all the time for illegals up in the States. Except when they're spoken about formally, like on the 6 o'clock news or in a magazine or newspaper. Then they call illegal aliens up in the States by their formal name, indocumentados, which means undocumented people. Meanwhile, on the streets, at work, in restaurants, and clubs, here in Latin America they call them mojados, wetbacks. Not even knowing it's a pejorative term. The fact is they've got no other name for them. Same with black people. Latinos call them negros. There's no pejorative term for a black person in Latin America. It's just negro, which reminds me of a very funny incident. I was at a Latino's home, sitting in the living room, watching a recent Hollywood Cops and Robbers movie dubbed in Spanish, when suddenly one of the Latina ladies watching the flick with me blurted out, "Hey, Johnny, how come in so many American movies people use the word negro over and over again, sometimes 2-3 times in the same sentence?" Then I thought, man, talk about lost in translation. I know what she means. You know how people talk in the States, especially black people in the hoods and in the ghettos. They use the N-word like white people use the A-word. Awesome. Yeah, you know, there's a certain class of people that sprinkle the N-word in every single phrase and informal conversation, especially in the rap and hip-hop crowd. Not to mention for some classes of people, it's become a very common greeting when you meet a friend. Tell me, how many times have you heard this one? Hey, what up, my... N-word. And obviously, certain Hollywood movies are just littered with the N-word. Take Quentin Tarantino movies. For example, in the movie Django Unchained, the N-word was used 110 times. Then there's his movie Pulp Fiction. The N-word was used 10 times. And with his movie The Hateful Eight, the N-word was peppered throughout 45 times. So what do you think happens when those movies get to Latin America? And they all do. They're dubbed, translated, or subtitled, and every time an actor says the N-word, it's translated in Spanish literally as negro, which is why the young Latina was so curious. Why does that word show up so much, even two or three times in a single phrase or sentence? And you know, when she asked me that, I thought for a second, this is going to be an awful long explanation. And still, she probably won't get it. It's a cultural thing. So to make things quick and easy and not hold up the movie too much, I said, it's like this. In certain parts of the States, in certain cultures in the States, they interchange the word negro for the word man, like, hey man, hey negro. She bought it. Oh, and here's something you probably didn't know. When Latin Americans are using street slang, just like many people up in the States, they throw in the word man quite a bit as a filler word too, like, oh man, or what's up man? Only man in Spanish is hombre. So if you're talking to somebody, your gardener, your mechanic, the lady in the checkout window in the tienda, once in a while, and maybe even quite often, you're going to hear the term, sí, hombre, which means, yeah, man, or right, man. And you'll also hear people say, hombre. It's like, oh, man. And often, just as blacks use the N-word as a greeting sometimes, so will middle-class and lower-middle-class Latinos use the word, hombre. Hombre. Hombre, no creo. Like, good to see you. What up, man? Or, man, I don't believe it. Oh, and most of the times when they say, sí, hombre, which means right man or yes man, it'll come out as just one scrunched together word, sí hombre, instead of sí hombre. By the way, Latinos and Latinas alike will use the word hombre, sí hombre. But I digress, as usual. Where were we? Oh yeah, talking about the guy that was calling me out for saying that his country, in this case Colombia, was third world. Well, from the start I knew I was wasting my breath on that guy, but he pushed on. He said, you know, gringo, when you say third world country, it gives the image for your people as if we were a bunch of lazy Latinos in a Zorro movie, just sitting around with our sombreros and tequila, watching the corn grow. He said, you ought to get with it and modernize your way of thinking. Have a look around. We're not a third world country. We're a developing country. I said, oh, a developing country, huh? Excuse me. And what, may I ask, are you developing into? He thought a second and said, something like, my jammy. And I thought, oh no, he didn't really say my jammy, did he? Well, I really wasn't that surprised because that's the promised land for middle and upper middle class Latinos. Oh, and a little background here. We were on the 8th floor, the top floor of a residential tower. You know, a lot of the residential towers have a big open balcony on the top floor, sometimes with a gym and a swimming pool, the whole works. Plus a place for residents to party. In the upscale towers, anyway. And we were looking down on the city, in this case Bogota, and to the left, it was pretty impressive. Lots of construction, cranes everywhere, with dozens of brand new office buildings and towers. Then the Latin guy said to me, doesn't that remind you just a little bit of my jammy? I mean, without the sand and the ocean front. Then I spun around and looked over to the other side of the city, the side that looked all grungy and tacky with piles of garbage everywhere. I said, yeah, but what about this side? Then he said, I wouldn't worry about that. In 3 or 4 years, all that'll be high-rises and nice neighborhoods, too. And I thought, he's probably right. And you know, in the moment, I couldn't help thinking about what's happening in the big cities up in the States. L.A., San Francisco, Chicago, they're all looking more and more like the skanky side of Bogota. The difference is, Bogota's on the mend. It's gaining ground, not losing it. Exactly the opposite of what's happening in the big cities in the States. And then, in the moment, I thought, man, am I glad I'm not living up there anymore. How did I get so lucky? I know for expats and gringos, it's sad to think about. I mean, look, I'm from Chicago. Don't think that what's happening to Chi-Town isn't a bit painful for me to hear about. I mean, I've got all my relatives and old friends up there, and they're stuck there. Believe me, they do want out now, but they're stuck. But I was lucky. I escaped. Unlike them, I'm not in the thick of it, and I can watch the place implode from a nice, safe distance. It truly is a sad thing to think about, especially with all the relatives, friends, and connections you have back home, but I'm afraid it's like a freight train at full speed heading for a gorge and the bridge is out. But you knew that already. And that's why you're listening to this show, right? Meanwhile, back in Latin America, in sunny Oaxaca, Mexico, to be precise, today we've got another listener boots-on-the-ground report highlighting why it's no longer a good idea to have your plan B in Mexico, as if we needed more proof. But with this story today, our loyal listener strikes a nerve in the hearts of almost every gringo, not just in Mexico either, since it's all about cops, bribes, and extortion. And that can happen to anyone, anywhere in Latin America. So, this time in Bob's email subject line, he puts, details of my first Federale road extortion experience. Well, sorry about that, Bob, but it does happen, you know. All right, let's get into it, and I'll paraphrase a bit as usual. He says, hola, Johnny, from sunny Oaxaca, Mexico. After being here in Beanlandia, that's Beanlandia, as in refried beans, you know, frijoles. The wife and I have been here 5 years now. Well, wouldn't you know it, I was christened with my very first Federale road extortion this past week. Now, I knew that eventually it was going to happen. It had to happen. I've listened to friends and travelers coming through here with all kinds of mixed stories about being hit by these state-sanctioned, legalized banditos they call the police. In fact, I know of people who've had multiple extortion experiences and others who've had none. Like myself, I held out for 5 years. All right, me Johnny, let me toss in a comment. In a way, I don't like that word extortion. It sounds so severe. I say that because I'm sure some of you longtime listeners heard me tell the story of how I like to keep a 2-liter bottle of Coke and a big bag of Cheetos. That's Cheetos. That's Spanish for Cheetos. A tough translation there, huh? In the back of my car for times when I might get pulled over at one of those police roadblocks and checkpoints. You'd be amazed how happy and friendly the cops get when you say, hey, you wouldn't mind taking this stuff off my hands now, would you? Here, take it. I'm not hungry. I had mine earlier. Yeah, right. And if you're in any way health conscious, you know that's a lie. So is that kind of a bribe to avoid a possible extortion situation? Why, sure it is. Though some sticklers might say extortion is extortion, whether it's for 10 cents or $1 million. But I'd say the word extortion is a little harsh if you're only talking about a Coke and a bag of Cheetos. Oh, and by the way, I always buy the real brand name Coca-Cola and junk food. As an American, you know, you have to maintain certain standards. Because, you know, Latin American cops who are making $400 or $500 a month, they always buy the cheap off-brand colas that are half the price of real Coke, and the local mega salty junk food, which is even more poisonous than Cheetos. That stuff's dirt cheap, too, and it'll give you the Oprah look twice as fast. So the point is, having $2 worth of junk food stashed in the back of your car, in the off chance you'll get pulled over at a routine traffic stop, is the cheapest kind of anti-extortion insurance there is. I still don't like that word extortion for the small stuff. But back to our emailer. He says, Johnny, my wife thinks it's foolish me keeping a fifth of high-end gold tequila in an open bin between the front seats of my van. She always thought it was pointless, but man, did it come in handy this time. And here's what happened. He says, I rolled up on a pretty expansive roadblock on a 4-lane stretch manned by about 10 cops in brown uniforms. I figured they were Mexican state cops of some variety. So there I was, alone in my weathered old van, and the cars ahead were being questioned lightly, then allowed to pass on through. As I neared the zone where they pull you over, about 8 of them walked off down the road somewhere, maybe to eat, maybe to hit a whorehouse, who knows. That left just 2 guys pulling cars over. When I got closer, they sized me up and told me to pull over for an inspection. Truthfully, Johnny, it's always been a dilemma for me as to how I was going to handle that eventual shakedown situation. I knew it had to come. First off, do I speak Spanish or play dumb as dirt? Well, here's what happened, Johnny. When the first dirty uniformed guy came around, a guy who was definitely short of average on the IQ bell curve, he came to my window and told me to unlock the passenger side door. Unfortunately, my pride kicked in and I started speaking Spanish. And in that moment, I thought to myself, uh-oh, what'd I do? Thinking back on it, maybe it would have gone better if I'd have played the dull-eyed gringo rube, but so be it. Too late for that. What's done is done. So, the guy slipped into my passenger seat, sized up my minimal gear and surfboard, and promptly said, do you have $2 for us? He said it, smiling the whole time. $2, I thought. Is this a setup? $2? You can't even go to McDonald's for $2. So I said to him in Spanish, I don't have any dollars, only pesos, to which he said, oh, no hay problema. That's okay. After that, I sat still and didn't say a thing as we both sized each other up. Yep, for a while, there was stony silence, like a true gringo rube I was, who labors a sad inclination to stand on ethical principles. Yeah, as if ethics existed in this kind of situation. And then his partner, who seemed to be a real hipster cowboy type, whatever that is. But the description paints a nice picture, doesn't it? Anyway, he had perhaps a handful more brain cells than his partner. The first thing he said when he came over to the door was, "Do you have any guns or drugs?" Of course, I said no. I mean, who would say yes, right? Then he asked about that obvious bottle of tequila. He said, "What's that for?" What I should have said was, "It's for drinking and bribing cops, you moron." And since I didn't know they were actually federales because of their brown uniforms, I recklessly said, "What, that tequila? That's a gift for the federales." Then he said, "Nosotros son federales. We are the federales." And then, you're not going to believe this, Johnny, he asked if I like drugs. What a question, I thought. Some interrogation technique. "What do you think?" I said. I said, "No, I don't like drugs." And he said, "Well, my partner here sure does." And then he made the sign of a vagina with his two hands while his partner leered on and shook his head enthusiastically. I'll tell you, Johnny, it couldn't have been more surreal if a Mexican version of Rod Serling stuck his head in the window and said, "Bienvenidos la zona desconocido. Welcome to the Twilight Zone." As for me, I guess I should have remained stone-faced. What do you do when confronted with something that crazy? I figured it was better to just smile and say nothing. Then the hipster cop said, "Get out. We'll have to search you." And I said, "Who, me?" "Yeah, right. Who else?" Why do people always say that? "Who, me?" when you're the only one there? Then he said, "Yes, yes, you. Get out and come over here." So I turned off the engine, got out, and walked around the front of the van. The whole time saying to myself, "Well, shit, is this going south?" But oddly, I didn't seem too rattled at the time. So once I was at the passenger door, the guy just touched my pocket, then climbed inside the van. Then he rifled through my stuff in my backpack. But later on, when it was over, I checked, and he didn't take anything. Then he jumped out of the van and said to me, "How about you give us a little of that tequila?" To which I said, "Well, that's a lot of tequila for two guys." To which he said, "Yeah, but there's going to be four of us drinking it." Then I said in Spanish to him, "I guess we'll call this a donation then, right?" He nodded and said, "Sí, un donación, correcto." Then I said, "Fine, okay." And the guy lifted out the fifth and gave me a smile again and said, "Pásale, pásale," which means, "Now you can pass or get the hell out of here." Then, oddly enough, his mood changed. He was happy. We somehow bonded, so he put his hand out for me to shake it. All the while, Johnny, I was wondering where that hand had been previously. Better not to know. Though, like I said, the guy was a hipster, so when I reached out to take his hand, he drew back slyly, like the joke was on me. Instead, he gave me a fist bump. The guy had definitely seen way too many Fast and Furious movies, which are, by the way, called in Spanish, Rápido y Furioso. Anyway, it was fist bumps all around, with his partner too. Then they slithered off to some unknown bar, cafe, or whorehouse where the other cops had gone. So in the end, Johnny, maybe I got off cheap. Who knows? I learned, too, that the locals here vary on how they deal with these guys. Turns out, the offers and bids do vary from 100 pesos for a simple cup of coffee and on up. As for me, I carry another kind of insurance, a $100 bill, secreted away, just in case I run into some real psycho knuckle-dragger types. Some cops, you know, play the power game to the limit and talk about jail time. So I guess this, my first encounter with crooked cops, turned out all right. I'm only short a bottle of tequila. But in the end, after all was said and done, I just kept thinking, why even deal with these sub-morons in the first place? I kept on thinking this is reason 842 to fix my gaze somewhere south of the border. So then he says, "Keep the faith, Senor J." That's it. That's my story. I'm sticking to it. Thanks for the great continued tips via the shows. Me and the wife continue to learn something useful in nearly every Expat Files episode. Signed, Bob. All right, Bob. Thanks for that. I'm just wondering if that was the first time you ever got pulled over, or had you been pulled over before and just skipped on by? Now, I know you've been down in Mexico 5 years now. That's a pretty long time. How you manage not to get nicked for mordida in 5 years, I don't know, especially if you drive a lot. Over the years, it's happened to me quite a few times, though it's never cost me that much. At the most, $20. That's not to say I haven't been stopped in my almost 30 years down here now, and not been nailed for mordida. If I was to put a percentage on the number of times I was stopped by the cops and paid mordida, I'd say maybe 1 in 5. So I'd say 4 out of 5 times they got nothing out of me. And you know, I've always found the best way to deal with them is to play the dumb gringo. No Spanish, please. Or hit them with some Spanish that's so god-awful bad and incomprehensible their ears just can't take it, and they give you the bum's rush and shoo you along. The problem is, though, if you're in Mexico, most of the cops know enough English so that if you don't know any Spanish or play the dumb gringo, they'll use their 20 words of English on you, and one of those words will always be money, dinero. Another popular English word with cops on the take? Gift. As in, where is my gift? However, when you're south of the border, as you pass into Guatemala and parts south, there probably isn't one cop in 50 that even knows 20 English words. Unless, of course, prior to being a cop, he was an illegal up in the States, got caught and deported, then he'll know plenty of words of bad street corner English. Which reminds me of a show I did 5 years ago or so. You might remember I mentioned two cops I kept running into over and over again. I used to see their cruiser parked out in front of various fast food joints. One of the cops would go out of his way to come and talk to me in his broken street English. And his backstory, exactly as mentioned. He snuck into the States, worked for 3 years in a meatpacking joint, got busted and deported, and now he's one of Guatemala's finest. Whatever that is. Now, you'd think a guy who snuck into a country illegally and got deported would, upon his return, have very limited job opportunities. But just the opposite. He pointed out that on the police department application, if you put down you know some English, you get extra points in your favor. In fact, it's such a desirable thing to have on your resume. When you check the box and put down your comprehension level, they'll send you into another room to have a talk with an English-speaking cop, just to make sure you're not BSing about it. Oh, and he told me because his English was pretty good, they bumped him up to a cop with his own patrol car. And that, as you might imagine, is every cop's dream, to have his own patrol car. Because they don't make enough to own their own cars, the patrol car becomes the family vehicle, too. Here's another thing you can count on in the cop extortion racket. Remember Bob said the other 8 cops took off for a walk and only 2 cops shook him down? Well, that's the plan. The cops will never shake you down if there's a big group of them. However, expect a possibility of an extortion play if you're stopped by just 1 or 2 cops. So why is that? Well, you probably heard me say this before, but when there's a group of cops, let's say 5, 10, whatever, there's always 1 or 2 guys in the group that don't go for that kind of stuff, and or there are cliques, rivalries, and jealousies in the group. Besides, if there's 8 cops in on it, the split is going to be pretty miserable. So remember, if you do get pulled over and there are lots of cops around, everything's usually on the up and up. But still, make that offer of the 2-liter Coke and Cheetos. Why? Because that should make sure you're off and on the road in record time. Because you see, in my experience, every time you get pulled over at one of those stops and you're not bearing gifts, that's generally a half hour or more out of your day. You can count on it. And why is that? Well, first thing they'll ask is for your papers. They'll walk off somewhere with them. 3 or 4 of them will huddle and have a look at your stuff. They'll open your doors and trunk, poke around a bit. They'll make a few orbits around your car, talk about Uncle Julio in Cleveland and ask if you know him. Let's just say when you're dealing with cops south of the border, they're on their own kind of mañana time. Mañana time on downers. Oh, and Bob's dead right when he talks about the reaction you get after you paid him off. Suddenly, it's old home week. You're best friends now. I remember that happened to me just about a year ago now. 2 motorcycle cops stopped me at night on the beach in a big resort town, and they asked to see my papers. I didn't have them. They were in my hotel room just about 2 blocks away. They said it was a requirement that everyone had to have papers on them, which I knew was not true. In the end, I ended up giving them a, quote, gift of $10. They got off their rice burner, put their arms around me, and gave me a big bear hug. Hey, my own brothers aren't that friendly to me unless they haven't seen me in 3 or 4 years. Meanwhile, since we were talking about Mexico and how it's not a good place to have your plan B, comes this article. Came out August 30th, 2019. The title? In Mexican cities, you can feel the fear. And I'll paraphrase this and cut out the boring parts. It says, the only hint that anything is wrong in La Estancia, a leafy suburb of the Mexican city of Guadalajara, are the dozens of for sale signs posted in the yards of the houses in the neighborhood. It says, people started moving out of La Estancia in May when police started finding decomposed bodies in some of the houses in the neighborhood. Then it says, just last month, a kidnapped victim escaped and directed police to another address in the same neighborhood. Inside, they found a corpse and three severed heads. And so far this year, police have discovered more than 15 murder and burial sites in the city, some holding dozens of dead bodies, most of them found in rented homes. Turns out, criminals have found a better way to dispose of their bodies, using private rental properties. Turns out, when you hide or bury a body within a home, that act creates legal barriers to authority access. Often the bodies can remain in houses for years without being found. Neighbors sometimes know about this. The silence of those neighbors fuels the impunity. Although some locals later report hearing screams or smelling decayed flesh, few dare to call the police on the house next door. Then it says between 2006 and 2016, at least 1,978 clandestine burial sites were unearthed in Mexico. Then it says there are so many cases of missing persons, 40,000 missing in the last 10 years, that desperate parents have taken up the task of digging for the remains of their missing kids. And these efforts have led to shocking discoveries. For example, in 2016, an anonymous tip-off led one group of parents to a wooded area in the eastern state of Veracruz, where they discovered at least 298 bodies and thousands of bone fragments. But more recently, since it's always more difficult to search a private property because you need a warrant to enter, criminal gangs have been burying and storing bodies in house rental units. Different gangs rent from landlords who have no idea what the property is being used for, but they get the rent. And as long as they get the rent, no questions are asked. It says there are also many documented cases where uninhabited properties have been turned into torture houses or burial sites too. Then it says police officials are warning that this particularly new body disposal tactic is taking its cue elsewhere from the Department of Jalisco. Then it says the problem is so severe in a particular housing complex known as Chula Vista that locals have taken to bricking up the doors of abandoned homes to prevent criminals from using them as their burial and body dump sites. Meanwhile, back in Guadalajara in 2018, authorities discovered so many dead bodies, they ended up renting refrigerator trailers to put the bodies in. In one case, authorities said just one trailer was filled with 273 unidentified bodies. And for some time, they had it parked on the street in a suburban area of Guadalajara. Wow, talk about gruesome, huh? My advice, forget about Mexico for your plan B. If you still think it's a good idea, you're out of your mind. But, by all means, have a plan B and get it going soon. But make sure it's south of the border.
South of the border.
You've been listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America. If you need some help with your own plan B, we can schedule a one-on-one phone or Skype consult. Just send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to get on the waiting list for my next week-long Expat Insider Seminar in Central America, where you're guaranteed to get a 2 to 5 year head start on your plan B, send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. Nos vemos.